Aftershocks by Andrew James. An incidental meeting. It starts with a swell and then a drip. A small spring bubbling up from far beneath the earth and growing, expanding and rising until a pool forms at the base of a rocky slope. The water is cold, clear, and clean. It is fresh and virgin, and it happily churns in its small home until, at the last, it grows with confidence and spreads out, falling hungrily down the face of the rocks and further down to where the trees and grass meet at its edge. There it pauses to collect itself and ponder its new home. Here is the life it craves, to sustain, to support, to motivate and encourage. Here it has found its nutrient-rich home where it can settle. But still it carries on, burrowing into the earth and plotting a course, each small pebble at first in its way, quickly overcome and buried as it grows more and more forceful until eventually it is sure of itself and carries away the earth and debris around it. It builds and grows and moves until it has become a force of unbelievable power. It is a river now. It is capable of destruction or creation. It knows that with its might, it can power the world and shape the continents. It can sustain life and create life anew, or wash it away as if by choice. It is a thing of beauty and delight, and it is the very pathway of industry. Its own journey supports the journey of others, and its will is second to none. The small stones and pebbles and rocks that once stood in its way are now lost and sunk in its depths. Only small ripples on its surface hint at what was once a boundary to its eventuality. The river is now inevitable. The river is eventuality and fate and unalterable. It is a quest that is, by its very nature, already complete. The river yearns for its conclusion. It yearns for the end of its path like Sisyphus. It knows only repetition, but there is a purpose in its permanence. The river knows it is the strongest and the mightiest. What hope is there in changing me? It wonders. What reason could there be for me to be other than I am? What could ever alter me? For I am the beginning and the end. I have been and I will be for longer than any. My path is foretold since I carved it aeons ago. I am. What happens when an unstoppable force meets an unmovable object? The river has never encountered anything stronger than it, so it doesn't know to ask this question. It has never known this riddle, and so it does not look up and notice what has suddenly occurred around it. It has only known its own strength. Maybe because of that it allows itself to be subdued, and it becomes docile in its assuredness. It does not notice when the mountain begins to cast out its smoke. It does not notice until too late the ash and gray that settles around it, choking the life from all it has promised to sustain. It is too late when that ash turns to rock and the sky falls from morning to night. The river ignores these things until, at last, a mountain the size of the universe itself crashes into it and boils its water and breaks its world and dissects the river in twain. Cut off from its path, the river is confused and lost now. Teeming and eddying within itself, fighting to find its way back, what was once a fuel of certainty is now doubt and indecision. The river remembers the idea of what it was to become, what it was meant for, but now the river, ever unchanged, has changed. Its course, once so dominant, has now been reset, cast a chance. It asks itself, am I still what I was? Am I the same as I was before, or am I something new, somehow not what I was, even though I still am what I was? The once pure water is now filthy and black. The dark and clouded depths hide no life, and the path of the river now strangles the world it once sustained. The river struggles to find its route once again, but it no longer exists. Instead, a new path must be carved from where, once again, it may find its final stop. It carries the mark of its own destruction with it now on its path and transposes it on all around it like a sickly film soaking the world that it promised to support. It becomes inescapable. It yearns to give life again as it once did. It yearns to once more sustain and grow and build. Instead, it watches as around it the world withers with its passing, and it wonders to itself, is this my fault? Did I choose this in my pride? Was this my doing? But still, it carries on. It continues because it is a river, and that is what a river must do. It had been 2 years since I'd seen Chad. 2 years to build up the crumbling walls of my life and then, once again, watch them fall, and now I was back with Chad. I had come crawling back, hands and knees kind of crawling, begging him to help. The process had been slow at first, but we were beginning to make progress. The whole thing had seemed ridiculous to me. Eye movement desensitization and reprogramming, or EMDR for short. It consisted of him waving his fingers in front of my eyes over and over, maybe 20 times, and then suddenly I was going to be able to remember things I had long forgotten. At least that was the idea. I had held little stock in it at first. Was this science fiction? It had worked, though. It was scary how well it worked. I wasn't just remembering. I was seeing things, watching things, feeling things. It was bizarre the way my mind could be back there in the midst of my memory, and yet I knew I wasn't really there. Let's get started. The chair faces me again in the familiar, cool, dim office. You said you remember meeting him the first time. You remember it started with you becoming friends. Okay, go with that. He scooted the chair closer and placed the paper he'd been writing on down on the floor. Okay, let's start. It had become matter of fact now, my conditioned response when he sat across from me. Well, not across from me, more like 45 degrees from me. I leaned forward and got ready for what happened next. It helped if I leaned forward, got closer to it, leaned into it. It had become my memory stance, as though by the position of my body I could physically will myself to remember. Then I was there, sitting in an old cinema as the sound of a movie reel started up. The familiar flapping sound of the tape roll as it began to spin and the ends beat a staccato tempo against the edges of the projector. The sudden whir as the wheels spun faster and faster, flashing the still frames rapidly in succession before the light, sending a picture to a screen. In the cinema, all was empty and dark except where I sat alone in the center seat. There were signs of life all around me, but it was an echo of that life. It was the result of that life. Popcorn, stale and trampled, decorated the floor. In spots, there was a shine to the ground as old spilled soda varnished the rough concrete. And then a beam of light from the projector illuminated the darkness just above my head, and I could see dust floating in the empty cinema air like fluorescent algae floating to the ocean surface. The movie began to count down. 3, 2, 1, and on the screen, a young boy walked down a street somewhere in Florida. "Hi," a tall, lanky, orange-haired man said. He was standing in the street in long jean shorts that hung loosely from a wiry frame, not gaunt or emaciated, just thin, unathletic. He looked as though he should be taking a dog on an afternoon walk, but there was no dog with him. He was very much alone. He'd been walking near the gatehouse entrance to the neighborhood and casually crossed the subdivision drive to say, "Hello." "Hello," the boy responded. He'd seen the man walking the day before. The walk home was convenient, with the grade school being directly outside the neighborhood, but the boy's mother would expect him home shortly after 3:30 dismissal to check in, so he kept his pace as the man approached. "What's your name? I've seen you in the neighborhood a few times now. You just moved in, right? What's your name?"
"I'm Andrew," said the boy softly. "We just moved here from Illinois."
"Illinois? Cool. You've got the Bulls there." The lanky man chuckled and brushed his orange hair back from where it had fallen, covering his eyes. It was messy looking, but intentionally so. It gave off that carefree attitude that is so often marred by its own attempt to look carefree. He pulled it off well. He was very tall, but still the long jean shorts came down almost past his knees. It gave him a youthful appearance on par with his messy hair.
"Well, welcome to Florida, then. Did you live in Chicago? I visited Chicago once, a long time ago, though, probably before you were born, with my family. It was a pretty big city. It's about all I remember of it."
The boy had never been to Chicago, at least not that he remembered. He'd moved from a small town in the middle of the state that no one had ever heard of, unless you were from that town or one of the three small towns around it. Before that, he had been somewhere else. To him, Chicago had been a world away, but then again, so was Florida. The lanky man continued. Have you met any friends yet? I know you only got here a few weeks ago, but I bet you know everyone in the neighborhood already, huh? Just about everyone here is pretty friendly. What kind of music do you like to listen to? The question seemed abrupt, and out of place. He hadn't expected it and wasn't sure what to say about this sudden inquiry. The question itself had come up several times already since this move, and up until this point in his life, he'd only listened to the music his parents had provided. The performances of Andrew Lloyd Webber, the soundtrack to Cats, Evita, and The Secret Garden, those were the limits of his musical discovery to date. Anything else he listened to was dominated by the big, bold word Disney on the cover. He was aware that there was more to music, and even more aware that he shouldn't bring up any of those soundtracks to the other boys of his age when he was prompted. But he didn't know what he was supposed to listen to. Music had never been a conversation until he'd arrived here. His most recent upheaval to Florida, and the abrupt change from the small world of the Midwest Rust Belt little town to this humid, tropical city of Miami, had shaken him on the very first day when a classmate had asked him who his favorite R&B singer was. He couldn't name even one R&B singer. He'd shrugged and said he liked them all, though, and hidden his clumsy naivety from the boy by quickly fleeing the conversation. What was R&B, he wondered. Now he was faced with the question once more, and he felt just as self-conscious as before. It was made even greater by the fact that this was the second time he'd been quizzed on such information. He was going to need to investigate this soon, he thought, but for now, I like R&B, he said automatically. The man looked slightly bemused. Really? Rhythm and blues, huh? That's not really my thing. You ever listen to Madonna? She has a new album out. A movie, too. Truth or Dare. Have you ever heard of it? He knew Madonna. This was a good sign. Of course, he wasn't allowed to watch her music videos, or any music videos for that matter, but he had heard her songs now and then on those radio stations his parents occasionally had on in the car. He felt slightly more comforted by that prospect. I like her, he said. I've listened to some of her songs on the radio, he added hastily, lest the man quiz him further. Yeah, she has a new video, Truth or Dare, it's good. I have it at home. Maybe one of these days you can watch it with me. The tape reel flickers, and the movie goes black. The light of the projector still filled the cinema. There's a gap here. I don't know why. Because nothing else important happened then? The next memory I have is us riding bikes, or I am at least. Okay. Go with that. And his fingers began to move again, back and forth before my eyes, and my vision blurred. Black isn't a color, it's the absence of colors. It's no colors at all. I don't care, they said I could paint my room any color, and I think black is cool. It's poetic, I think. Black's the opposite of poetic. Poetic is lots of colors, it's all the colors. Actually, white would be the most poetic, because it's all the colors. White's not a color at all, he said stubbornly. He still wanted black. Black seemed more brooding. And brooding seemed rebellious. He wanted to be rebellious, so he wanted black. He wanted to be a lot of things, things he would admit he would never be if he ever chose to admit anything. The idea of being those things was far more appealing than the action of being. And so, he hid there in the ideas of those things where it was easy and safe. Let's turn in up here. They turned off the main road, through the neighborhood, and into a long cul-de-sac of unfinished homes. The streets had the familiar feel of any construction site, and it was hard to believe that just one street over were row upon row of perfectly manicured crabgrass lawns and tidy little entryways. This was an entirely new world, secluded, like an oasis. Reddish-brown, mud-colored drives ran up to open garages still waiting for their doors. Before that, the mud stretched in countless wheel-sized smudges into a street still littered with mostly empty soda bottles, and the occasional beer can. Cigarette butts were everywhere, and the smell was more of a reek. It was the smell of mud and sweat and wood and glue and chemical compounds that you can't name. It smelled stale. It smelled like a wasteland, where there was once life, but it had been a messy and volatile and unhappy life, so the occupants had moved on. The two stopped in front of one large house, more finished than the others. Its first floor was almost incomplete, but the second floor was still the familiar framed outline of the home it would eventually become. Inside the house, the same remnants of life were accompanied by tools and newly installed appliances, and the stench grew even stronger, if that was possible, until it felt almost thick, like you could touch it. It sat on the skin and left a damp film that would need to be wiped away eventually. Water and waste lay around the house in pools, and it was clear that the lack of functioning bathroom led to the use of corners or doorways by the construction crew instead. Once upstairs, the air became somewhat more breathable. The open walls to the outside allowed a breeze in and filtered away some of the smells of piss and sweat and angry men with angrier wives who wanted more from life, but the good years were over, and now it was sweat and cheap beer until the end. "There's really no such thing as gay. Is that what worries you the most?" the orange-haired man asked, as he casually picked up a bottle cap off the ground and tossed it out into the muddy yard. "There's really no such thing, honestly. That's all made up now. Doing what you want and what feels good is what people do now. Gay was something that people made up. You can like things and not be gay, you know, if that's what worries you." He always had a different agenda than mine. It was like we were in totally different pages the whole time. I'm not sure if we ever existed in the same dimension as one another. More like we could interact physically and be aware of one another's presence, but as far as actual communication, nothing. Different languages. Like we were both reading the scripts of two different movies, but I didn't really care that his thoughts always seemed dedicated to the same thing, sex. Looking back, it was almost always sex that we discussed, and as soon as he'd been able to introduce it, he did, and then it was always sex from then on. Being gay wasn't what had worried him. At least it hadn't until then. But his real fear seemed silly and small. Maybe it was something that should worry him. How did he explain that his real worry was so different than being gay or being straight or whatever cross-pollinated hybrid Frankenstein version the man was explaining now? He was scared of something much more intensely his own. It was a more basic fear in a deeper area of him. If he could have explained it, if he could have come up with the right words to make someone understand, it would have been large words, like secluded and exile. Words that he didn't know yet that would have been easily answered and understood by anyone who cared, anyone who took the time to understand. But there was no one else to hear those words. Words like isolated, nonconformist, pariah. And so there was no one to translate those feelings for him and help him understand the fear and the seclusion and the revulsion he felt at himself every day until it had stopped waking him up and stopped making him sad and lonely, and pain became an ache that became nothing at all. Feeling different had become ordinary. Along with it came impulses he didn't understand, impulses to say and do things that others found different or out of the ordinary. Truthfully, it was just out of context. Like only hearing one side of a conversation, like right now. "I don't know," he said simply. He shrugged and looked around. "Maybe over there," he said, pointing to a pile of pressed wood sheets laying one atop the other that was across the open expanse of the second floor. "Maybe go over there and do it. I'll stay here." "Would that be easier for you?" the orange-haired man asked, even as he began walking almost eagerly across the house and around the rising staircase that interrupted the otherwise open floor plan of this unfinished second floor. Only a few framed doorways and supporting beams interrupted the huge, open expanse of that second floor. In a few months, where the boy stood right now would be an upstairs bedroom, and a young family would be happily moving in a bed and a desk for a child not much older than himself. On the future wall across from him would be pinned posters of faraway lands and superhero characters. They would give no view across the staircase to the home office that was where the man now stood. In a few months, there would be no way for him to see across the second floor to where the man sat now, more like leaned against a large pallet of wood that would ironically be nailed up exactly between them, obstructing any view as he slowly slid his shorts down. In a few months from now, this house would be wiped clean and whitewashed until no scraps or scents were left over. The muddy, muck-covered entryway would be neatly paved over,
and shards of broken glass would be cautiously shoveled up and streets hosed down until it was all pristine. In a few months, there would be no memory or sound or hint of what had happened here. There would be no footprints to show the man's path to the other side of the second floor, marked by dirty shoes and little imprints in the sawdust-covered floor. There would be no pile of wood to show where he sat. In a few months, the moment that was so clear right now would be long gone. In its place, there would be a tiny scar, where the earth had been opened and a small seed had been deposited into the ground to lay dormant and to slowly let its tendrils and roots grow deeper and deeper. For now, there was only a small, wide-open second floor, where a man stood, his shorts now pulled low, and a young, quiet boy not too far away stood looking back at him, and then one small gasp from one, and a smile from the other, and a simple little moment where a stone the size of the universe crashed into a river.